Welcome to the Santam Ensure Your Future Money Bootcamp with me, Maya Fisher-French.
And me, Mapalo Maku. To give our listeners a bit of background, we have been working with Santam staff members where we take them through a money bootcamp.
And last year, after seeing the amazing changes these individuals went through, we realized there was an opportunity to take this money journey to a broader audience. So thank you very much to Santam for sponsoring this podcast. Mapalo, today we're going to be talking about life cover. And I have to tell you, the reason we talk about life cover so early in the financial journey of our mentees is because that sits as our biggest risk. And, you know, my debit orders go off every month. And, you know, after my mortgage, my biggest debit order is on life cover. And it does feel like a crutch purchase, I have to tell you. But, you know, I have to ensure... you know, I've got kids who need to be educated. Yes. I work for myself. You know, how do you have life cover?
I do, Maya. And for me, it's such an important part of financial planning. I would not sleep well at night knowing that I don't have life cover or income protection, for example, because I work for myself. So for me, it is very important. And I know for a lot of people, it is a crutch purchase. One of the things that normally goes first off someone's budget when they are experiencing a really tight financial situation is, well, I mean, it's insurance. I don't really need it.
Mm. Let's hope nothing happens.
Let's hope.
Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed. So I think to really unpack this, and I think also, Mapalo, to really understand, you know, when do you spend on risk cover? When do you invest with this little bit of pool of money we have? We are joined today by Johan Steyn, who is a certified financial planner at Rainmaker Blue Star at Sanlam. And I must tell you, Johan is working with some of our mentees who need that bit of additional financial planning around their retirement and life cover. So welcome, Johan. And I'm going to start off with that question. How do you find the balance between insuring for the unknowable and saving for the future?
Yeah. Ladies, thank you very much. Thanks for the opportunity. Yeah, that's a very, very difficult one. Because we as humans tend to focus on spending our money on things that we can get the benefit from as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. And rightly, as you said, Maya, it's a grudge purchase. It's an expense for a benefit that you as an individual will never see yourself. And that's the first thing that one should realize is when you take out life cover, it's not for yourself. It's all the provisions, all the protection that you provide to your family or your friends or your business. It's to make provision for that if you are not in a position to do so because of the natural thing that can happen and you can pass away.
So now, Johan, when you sit with a client, how do you determine their risk needs? Because, you know, I think most of us have seen on TV, you get a 1 million rand life cover. How do I actually know how much life cover I need?
So I think what's important is to not follow a process of just taking life cover as a single amount or see an advertisement on TV and buy a 1 million rand because you can afford 100 rand or 200 rand a month. And that's usually when people buy life insurance like that, that they don't really realize the impact of that life cover on their financial planning and their dependents. So the ideal way, and that's the only way that we recommend clients to approach this, is to do a proper financial plan, whereas we look at the actual cash flow need of an individual's financial dependents, but also capital responsibilities like the bond on your home, the debt that you own your car, any potential capital expenses, education for your children, and we build a financial plan around those income and capital needs and then determine a capitalized amount of sufficient life cover.
And that must be very different at different ages. And I mean, I always look at young people. You're starting out, you're 25 years old, you're getting your first paycheck. Do you really need life cover? I mean, what is your most important asset that you need to be insuring?
So we don't generalize depending on the age of a person. So we would typically look at a person's individual circumstances. But in general, a young person doesn't have a family and their biggest asset is actually their potential to earn income. So for a young person, it would be more appropriate and most probably it would be more important to look at income disability cover, temporary and long-term disability cover. Because if you lose your ability to work, you lose your ability to earn an income. And then everything else falls apart.
I must tell you, Johan, my sons, when they started driving, I took out disability insurance for them. Because I realized, I thought, if they're in a car accident, I'm the one who's going to spend the rest of my life looking after them, you know, at this age. So I thought, well, I need to insure this. So it's actually, it was actually not expensive. You know, when you're very young, sometimes these covers are not actually that expensive.
I've never thought about it that way, Maya.
I know. It's a horrible thing to do. It's a really hard thing to do, to take something out on your child, because you're basically worried that you're encouraging the universe to become them or something. But, you know, I did. I thought about it, and I thought, I don't want to be in a situation where something happens and I'm now financially responsible for them.
Yeah.
So that it is something you have to actually think about.
Well, I think for all parents to encourage their children as soon as they start to earn an income, to take responsibility for protecting that income. And nobody wants to be dependent on anyone else. I mean, one of the biggest challenges for young people is to get independent, and especially independent from their parents, so that they can start to make their own rules in life. So just as important as retirement savings are for long-term planning, income disability is important for short-term and immediate planning and protection.
I want to get into breaking down what all these different insurances are, because we're throwing these terminologies around and not everyone always understands them. But before we get there, I wanted to ask you about employee benefits. So many young people, you know, not unlike Mapalo and I, who do not have an employer, they work for someone and they will have employee benefits there. So how do you look at the employee benefits that they receive when you're doing those calculations? And also, how important is it that your employer has a product that is transferable, can continue should you leave them?
So when you do a financial plan for a client and you considering the potential need or the shortfall for risk cover, it's always very important to keep in or bring into calculation employee benefits. So your big corporate companies, but even your smaller companies nowadays, do offer minimum benefits that is compulsory for people when they join the company. And when it comes to income protection, usually that income protection covers the maximum allowed insurable interest that a person can have. So it's very important to bring that in consideration, to not over-insure yourself, because especially with income protection, if you're over-insured, you won't be able to claim against all your benefits. When it comes to employee benefits, there's also other benefits like your life cover, which is usually included. But then it's also very important when people consider these life cover benefits to differentiate between the two types of life cover that you get under employee benefits. You get what we call is approved life cover, and you get unapproved life cover. Now, your approved life cover is typically the cover that falls under Section 37C of the Pension Funds Act. So when you pass away, the trustees of that retirement fund or risk benefit fund determines who your financial dependents are, and they must allocate the funds accordingly, and they can also be held responsible. So although you can nominate beneficiaries, for instance, on that approved life cover, the trustees have got the final say to protect your actual financial benefits.
You know, because that's certainly with your retirement funds.
Yes.
So there's a portion of life cover that could also be part of that
That's
they have
correct.
To make a decision about. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, actually. There's approved and unapproved.
Okay.
Yeah, the unapproved is a group policy, but it works similarly than an individual life policy. So you can appoint your own beneficiaries, and whatever you've appointed, that will be the person or individual or even your estate. You can even have that funds paid out to your estate, and make provision for dependents or others by means of your will.
And I'm actually dealing with a case that I'm going to be handing to Johan now, one of our mentees. And she has got so much life cover, and I don't think she realized how much life cover she had versus retirement. You know, she's way over-insured on life cover. One of the questions I was looking at with her is, you know, when she retires, you may want to keep some of your benefits like critical illness, those sorts of things. You know, can you ask your employer, can you remain somehow? Is that transferable? How does that work?
So it definitely differs from employer to employer and fund to fund. So to have a convertible amount, there's a cost involved for the employer or then for the members of that fund. So it can make the fund slightly more expensive, but most funds have got that option where you can convert some of your benefits into individual benefits if you leave the company's service. What most clients tend to forget is that group risk benefits or employee benefits are what we call as term benefits. So they consider the time that, or the youngest person in the fund and the oldest person in the fund. And that determines the risk profile of the payouts on that fund. Whereas if you convert that cover to individual life or income disability insurance, now you're in an individual contract with the insurance company and it's different rates. And life cover, for instance, most life cover with insurance companies are whole of life, which means they cover you until you are 9,900 plus years old, forever. So they will have to pay out at some point. Whereas with employee benefits, they only pay you out until 60 or 65. If you don't pass away, there's no payout from the fund. So the cost is much cheaper. And that's the thing that people don't realize. I usually recommend that people, as soon as they start building families, even if they do have group risk benefit, to have at least some form of life cover in their portfolio, even if it's just for estate expenses, for instance, because you will always have estate expenses whilst you're employed, but even after retirement, you will have estate expenses. And having a little bit of life cover outside of your employee benefits and locking it in at a specific level rate is recommended for each individual.
So before, I know I can see the question you want to ask, Maya, but before we get there, when you do take on a continuation option, do you have to do medicals or you just continue based off of the group risk that you would have gotten with your company?
So the whole purpose of a continuation option is that you can do it without providing medical underwriting. Otherwise, because the rates that this continuation or conversion option will come in at will be normal life insurance rates. There's no discount on the life cover rate with the insurance company that the conversion option is with. Some funds offer what we call as a continuation option, whereas if a person retires from his employment, he can still carry on with his life cover under the fund. For instance, someone who retires early. So if your normal retirement age is, for instance, 65, but you retire at 60, then you can still carry on with that risk benefits of the fund until age 65, for instance. Santam, one of the employers that we assist in this process, they've got that option. Their retirement age is 60, and if they retire prior to that, within 5 years, they can continue up to normal retirement age or for a maximum of 5 years.
And why I'm asking that, Johan, is, you know, there was someone I was assisting and I told them that you actually need life cover. And they are 36 like myself and they have high blood pressure now. They have all sorts of things. And for me, that conversion or that continuation option, I think it's a brilliant way to continue having benefits without insurance companies saying, oh, well, now you are not so healthy anymore.
Mm. Mm. Try and go and get life cover if you've got some major illness.
So the one assumption that people should not make is if they do have health problems to think that the life insurance company will not offer them life cover. So you will have to declare all your medical circumstances when you apply for life cover, and the insurance company will gather some information. But based on the risk profile and your age and your specific conditions, the insurance company might still accept your application for life cover. They might even come back with a small loading, and they'll charge you slightly more because your risk is slightly higher. But don't assume that if you've got high blood pressure, for instance, that you can't get life cover. But even more so important, if you do have medical issues or a medical history, really consider your conversion and continuation options seriously. But the same applies still. You must have a need for the life cover. If there's no need, so it all comes back to your capital and income needs of your dependents and your estate, and make your decision based on that.
I want to get back to this need thing, because I think that comes back to this idea of all the different types of insurances you have. So I think we all know what life cover is, right? You're insured, you die, an amount's paid out. Where it starts getting tricky are things like critical illness or dread disease, as they call it. Then you've got disability cover. You've got lump sum disability cover. You've got income protection. So maybe just take us briefly through what each of those do, and maybe at what ages. I mean, I'm thinking, you know, I'm in my... Do you know that between 50 to 65, you're in your red zone? It's the most time that you're the most risk of dying or getting a critical illness, just by the way, or of dying. So, you know, these things matter. So maybe just unpack some of those for our listeners as well.
So I think life cover is the straightforward one, like you say. But you even get income life cover. I don't know if you know about it. But instead of having a capital payout, you can get a monthly payout. So many insurance companies offer an income payment for life cover. And that's especially if you need to, for instance, pay maintenance claims or your dependents are people you don't think will be able to deal with capital amounts. You don't have the cost or the ability to consider things like a trust. And you just want to make provision for income. You get income life cover. When it comes to disability cover, like you said, Maya, there's two types. You get your lump sum benefits and you get your income continuation benefits. In my opinion, the income one is the most important. Because typically, if you look at the lump sum benefits can pay for obviously capital expenses if you do become disabled, for instance, purchasing a wheelchair or adjustments at your home or anything like that. But if you consider your things like, for instance, your debt, you are paying that with your current income. So if you're not disabled, you get a salary or you get your business income and you pay off your monthly debt with your income that you earn. So the first thing you want to do is you want to replace your income so that you can continue as close as possible to normal for whatever was normal to you. But it's a combination. So disability would be a combination between the two. In my opinion, the income is the more important. And people tend to forget there's also two types of income protection. Sometimes it's products that are combined in one. Sometimes it's split up. But you get temporary illness or disability, and then you get long-term or permanent disability. And it's very important to differentiate between those as well. Dread disease is typically a cover, and this is a difficult one because it's fairly expensive. So this is a benefit that pays out if you get diagnosed with a serious illness, like cancer, a heart disease, having a stroke, and there's many others, but those are the main ones. The purpose of dread disease benefit is to support your lifestyle or even potentially additional medical expenses. But you cannot tie it up to a specific expense. So it's not like life cover where you say, listen, I've got a bond on my house of 1.5 or 2 million and I need life cover for 1.5 or 2 million to cover my bond if I pass away. If you get diagnosed with a serious illness, some people tend to think, okay, well, I want to cover my bond. But you don't necessarily need to cover your bond if you get a serious illness, because if you lose your job because of your illness and you've got disability cover, then the disability cover will pay your bond. If you pass away because of your illness, then your life cover will cover your bond. So you don't need to make provision for things like covering your bond or your debt by means of dread disease. It's a very expensive insurance for that purpose. So what we see in the industry is that people use these dread disease benefits, for instance, to take a sabbatical. So they are able to work, so which means because of this illness, so they can't claim against their disability income, but they want to take a break because they want to consider a different lifestyle, for instance, or additional medical expenses that is not covered by their medical scheme. Or a gap cover, for instance. But if I were an individual and I had to choose between having a dread disease benefit versus having a hospital plan and a gap cover, I would always recommend rather opt for a hospital plan and a gap cover benefit instead of a dread disease, and having a dread disease as a top-up or an additional benefit.
So it's quite interesting. So, Maple, my advisor said to me that critical illness was actually quite important for me because I work for myself. So remember, if I may not trigger my income protection. So I have income protection as well. Remember I mentioned that very expensive debit order that goes off every month? Because if something happens to me and I can't work for an extended period of time. But he said, you know, he's got clients, they're clients who get cancer, for example, and they now need to go for chemo and all of these things, but it may not trigger the income protection. They may not trigger the disability benefits, but they can't work optimally. So if I can't work optimally, it's not like there's an employer who protects me from these things who says, don't worry, you've got sick leave. I don't have sick leave. So from his perspective, he saw that as quite an important insurance. But it is a very expensive insurance. So you've got to kind of say, well, what is the level that makes sense? So it is interesting.
Yeah. And what about, how do you actually say how much you need in terms of dread disease cover? I mean, I know a lady who got diagnosed with cancer and her bills, medical bills, everything came to 800,000 rand. So how do you actually determine how much you need?
Where does medical aid fit in?
Where does hospital plan fit in?
So to answer you honestly, I don't know. And for me, it's absolutely a thumbsuck figure. And what we've done in our practice is that we've basically based it on affordability. So we try and get a person at least 2 years income. And that's, there's no method behind the madness of why I say 2 years income when they are young, because it's quite affordable and we try to lock the rates in so that they've got the cover while they're still young. But as you get older, the cover gets much more expensive, and then we try and get to at least 1 year's annual income. And the argument that I use with 1 year's annual income is if you do get diagnosed with a serious illness, it typically takes you between 6 to 12 months to determine what the effect of this new illness on your life will be. And at least it gives you a year's income, because rare disease benefits are a tax-free benefit. So it gives you a year's income, which you can then utilize at own discretion if you, for instance, want to take unpaid sick leave or unpaid leave from your employment.
Now, it brings me to the question of premium patterns, Johan.
Oh, premium patterns. I'm getting a couple of people coming who are in their late 50s saying, I can't afford this anymore.
I can't afford
it anymore.
I mean, when I took out my life cover, I didn't think about too much about the premium patterns, because nobody really presents to you to say, okay, you want life cover, you want income protector, you want critical illness. Here are the different premium patterns, and this is what it means.
And what it will cost you in 10 years' time.
What it will cost you in 10, 20, 30 years' time. I was young when I took out my stuff, and it seemed very affordable because I went with age rated. And now I start looking at it, I'm like, ha, this is looking
very expensive.
Very expensive.
Yeah. So I think this is a subject where a lot of my colleagues in the industry will probably shoot me because I've got my personal view on this. And this is one of those things that fits into the behavioral category and not necessarily the investment calculation category. Because if you consider some of the premium patterns, the compulsory growth premium patterns, like age-rated premium patterns, they are fairly cheap. So you can get risk benefits, life cover, disability cover, rare disease benefits at very, very low rates while you are still younger.
I'm going to pause then, there just to, yes, to our listeners. So age rated means it bases your risk rating on your age.
On your age.
So if you're 25, it'll be a lot cheaper than if you're 55.
Correct.
Yeah.
So basically what happens is as you get older, the premium gets more expensive. You know in advance, because most insurance companies will give you the simulation of what the premiums will be in 10 or 15 or 20 years' time. And there is the argument that if you can't afford sufficient life cover at a level rate, for instance, and a level rate is where you pay a slightly higher premium, but then the rate remains the same forever. There's a guaranteed term on all insurance policies. It can be 5 years, 10 years, 15, 20 years, depending on the type of benefit and product. But you can lock in that rate. So sometimes if you can't afford the life cover that you need or the disability income that you need, the question is, isn't it then better to at least take what you can, get sufficient cover, pay a premium that you can afford now, but then later on you obviously can't afford it, but at least then for some time frame you will be able to cover your risk, because something might happen today, but also something might happen in 15 or 20 years time from now. The problem is that people tend to forget why they opt for the different options. And in the industry, people tend to buy on price and price today, and not even price next year or the year thereafter. And when people take out these contracts, they should consider the lifetime expense on this. What we've done is we said, listen, there's phases of your life. So some of your risk benefits is benefits that you might only need for a certain period of your life. So let's take life cover as an easy example. There's a phase in your life when you are married and you've got children and you've got a bond and you've got a car with debt and you've got large expenses and you've got a family who's dependent on you and you need a lot of life cover. But 10, 20 years from now, when your children are done and they're out of the home and they do their own thing, you need much less life cover.
And your bond's probably
paid off.
Yeah.
Exactly. And you need less life cover. So typically when it comes to affordability, we'll offer clients for this temporary phase of their life, will offer them risk benefits at an age-related premium pattern, because you can even reduce the cover as your debt comes down and your needs change, because it's a phase of your life, and it's typically an expensive phase of your life when you also need more life cover. So it's kind of a double whammy that hits you. But then there's life cover and risk benefits that you will need forever. Like, for instance, just the thing that we talked about now, dread disease. I mean, the older you get, the higher the risk to get a serious illness. So you want sustainable benefits. So dread disease is, for instance, one benefit that you don't want to opt for on an age-related premium.
You're really
going to
need it more at 65 than at 35. Yeah.
So exactly that. And then also, like I mentioned earlier, life cover that you need for estate expenses. So to pay things like your executor's fees, estate duty, capital gains tax in your estate. So those are the expenses that actually grow as your estate grows. Now, it doesn't mean that you cannot have your dependents sell the assets to wind up the estate, but you need to weigh up the cost of what potentially, and it all comes down to planning, but you weigh up that cost and then based on affordability. I, for instance, myself, I've got a combination of level life insurance, so where the premium always remains the same, and that's the life cover that I intend to keep until the day I die, even if I get 100 years of age. But then I've got life cover, for instance, only for my debt, to pay off my bond. Once the bond is paid, if I can afford the higher premium, I'll probably continue with it. But if I can't, then I'll just cancel the policy. I'll lose the money. But nowadays, the products are clever with the insurance companies. They offer paybacks and cashbacks. For slightly higher premium, you can actually, after 10 or 15 years, you can get your premiums back. So you need to consider all these options. Products have become very much complicated nowadays.
Yeah. I know, and that's where financial planners come in, who can explain all this stuff to you and do it properly, of course, and not just being interested in the sale, but actually working out what's going to work for you. And I mean, I actually have life cover that ends in 5 years' time, which is for my kids' education, because they'll be finished, you know. So I did exactly that.
Maya, so let's talk about these premium patterns, because it gets quite expensive. What do you do? You've had this life cover for many years, and let's say you are 60 and you're looking at your budget, you can't afford it anymore. What recourse do you have? Because, I mean, for me, I'm thinking about it as intergenerational wealth transfer, right? I want to have life cover so that I can have, funds to educate part of my cousins and...
So you want to convert your life cover. So if you pass away, you want that life cover to then form a foundation almost for assistance.
Absolutely.
I mean, I've seen this where people take over their parents' life cover, for example.
So, Mapalo, the nice thing about life cover is that you only need to supply insurable interest when you take out the life cover. So that's how life cover are legislated in South Africa, which means that when you take out life cover now as an individual, if you make provision for your family or for debt or whatever, the life insurance will provide you with the cover. But nothing prevents you, when you don't need the life cover anymore, to cede your policy to someone else. And it doesn't even have to be your children. It can be anyone. So there doesn't have to be an insurable interest again at that point in time. But yes, a lot of people or a lot of children take over the life cover on their parents' lives, because if you consider it from an investment point of view, let's say a parent turns age 65 or 70, they don't want or they don't need their life cover anymore. The child didn't pay this policy for the past 20 years. They only start paying now. So if you just do an investment calculation for the next 5 to 10 or 20 or 25 years that your parent might still live, it might be a very good investment.
You've got to trust your child. Yeah.
You've got to trust your child.
And, I mean, it's a conversation that you can have with your parents, if it's that type of family, to say, you know what, this can be a generational wealth instrument that we can use, and we split it between us as siblings, that sort of thing.
Yeah, so what we've done, for instance, when my own father, when he retired, he came to me and he said, listen, I've got this life cover. I don't need it anymore. Do you want to take it over? And I said, well, I don't really need life cover on your life. And it's kind of a difficult thought to think, listen, I'm going to be incentivized when my dad passes away. But then I realized this can be a very nice incentive for my children and future generations and wealth creation. So it's actually very cheap money if you consider that. And I took over the life cover that he didn't need anymore. But it was a strange thought at the time.
I know for sure we had the conversation with my mom. She's very comfortable with that type of talk. My dad, on the other hand, he's like, what are you guys trying to do?
And I think, you know, I've just finished reading the Rosemary and Glover story, Killer Cop, this woman who killed all her family members for their life covers. I think it's going to be some people are going to listen to this and go, no way.
No, I think that's going to come down to your personal view on that. But also what people can consider when it comes to their own life cover, sometimes they've got sufficient money. They don't need the life cover, for instance, but they've got sufficient cash flow to still pay for the life cover. And what we typically then do for clients is we calculate what percentage of your wealth do you use to contribute towards the payment of this life cover. And then how much of this wealth will be lost by means of estate duty or capital gains tax. So if you think you might lose 20% or even 25% of your estate because of estate duty, or 18% of your estate based for capital gains tax, then you might see that it might even just cost you 0.5% or 1% per annum on your total value of your estate for the cost of the life cover.
So life cover then doesn't form part of your estate duty.
It does form part of your estate duty. So if your estate is above the 3.5 million rebate, then whatever the life cover amount is, it will attract 20% estate duty.
But you won't pay capital gains tax and you won't pay executive fees on it.
Yeah, you can bequeath it directly. Yeah. If it goes via your estate and via the administration of your executor, you will pay executor's fees, but you don't have to. So typically what you can do with life cover as well is you can set up your beneficiary clauses so that only sufficient cash flow goes to the estate to protect the cost of the estate, and then the rest goes to the dependents directly. But some executors nowadays offer discount executors' fees on life cover that pays towards the estate for the purpose of covering their estate expenses.
Otherwise, they really aren't. Yeah. Otherwise, you're paying this executive for their fees,
exactly.
Effectively.
Yeah. No, they really are reasonable nowadays. You just need to contract it up front.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Wow, I feel like my head is whirling. There's so much fascinating information in there. And I hope that our listeners have been picking up points here. I mean, I know it feels like we got a little bit technical. Maybe for some people who've never taken life cover before, it's going over their heads a bit. But I think this is really interesting. And it gives you an idea about why we wanted to spend the time really unpacking life cover and risk insurance, because there are a lot of areas and elements to it. And I think it's really important to spend the time. And certainly, I mean, I personally have an advisor who helps me with my cover. And, you know, I do think it is something that's probably worth talking to an advisor about and making sure that you're using it correctly. And I think looking at your employee benefits, I think it's such an important question. It's one thing I've gone to all of our Suntime people that we're working with, and I've said, find out about continuity, because, you know, coming up to retirement, whatever, what are your options? Because for me, as I'm aging, I don't need my life insurance that much, but I do need my critical illness benefits. And, you know, what are they going to cost me over time? So I think those sort of things, and try and take our critical illness at 60. You're not really going to find that very easy. So you want to be able to maybe either have it before or have it when you retire as a continuity benefit. So very interesting. I've picked up a lot from you.
Quite
Johan.
A lot, yeah. Yeah. And I think for our younger listeners like myself who have young children, it is so important to have life cover. It is so important. And income protection, especially if you're working for yourself. But Johan, why is it so hard to get income protection when you work for yourself? Why do they make you go through loops and hoops? You have to provide this, you have to provide that.
So I suppose you have to prove your income as
well. Yes, you have to provide proof that you earn an income. But it's actually not difficult, because if you declare your income, I mean, you can provide your proof of income with a document as simple as your IT34 document from SARS. If you're a new business or you're working for yourself on a freelance basis, you can review it on a regular basis. So the life insurance companies, remember, they are in the industry to sell insurance to you, so they don't want to deliberately make it difficult for you to get income protection. They just want to make sure that the benefit that they provide to you is actually practically for you, and you will be able to use it practically.
Because you cannot be paid out in excess of your income.
No, you can't.
So you can't, there is always a danger of being overinsured. So you do need to make sure.
It should be always more profitable for you to rather go back to work than to claim from your insurance. And I mean, I've seen it. I've seen it with clients who are properly insured. They've got the proper maximum cover that they're allowed to get, self-employed and employed people who's employed with companies and corporates. And it's always more beneficial to rather go back to work than instead of being in a position where you live off an insurance income disability.
Great. Well, I think we really have covered all of our questions, but I think I've got 101 more. We're going to have to get John back on again. But I think it's given a really good and interesting insight into risk cover, not just life cover, risk cover.
Risk cover as a whole.
In general.
Yeah, and I think I love the fact that we really went into detail with income protection, tread disease, because oftentimes we focus so much on life cover and you forget about all the other risks that you have.
As I've discovered, it's the other risks that are more expensive now as well as I get older.
Well, I think just maybe as a final thought, where it becomes difficult is if people can't afford all the different types of cover, and then it's difficult to start to prioritize, and then one start to think of where's the biggest impact gonna lie, and coming back to income protection again, temporary disability or temporary sickness is probably where your biggest risk lies. That's something that most people can relate with, and that should be the most important risk benefit. And then one should start to consider permanent disability benefits and dread disease benefits. Life cover, I think, is on a stool of its own. So that's also income protection, just in another form.
Well, I mean, your chances of being disabled or before a certain age are much higher, or getting ill, getting critically ill, or being disabled or whatever, than actual death. So it is a difficult one to navigate. But yeah, absolutely. We don't all have infinite pots of money. So it is often about, you know, am I saving for my child's education, or am I taking out life cover in case something I can't? So it is about sitting down and seeing how do you put those priorities together.
Thank you so much, Johan, for bringing such fantastic insights. Like we said, we have more questions now.
It's a pleasure, Apalu. Thank you,
and,
Maya.
And in our next episode, Johan did allude to this, but we're going to be digging into medical aids, medical insurance, and gap cover in our next episode. So you definitely want to be listening out for that.